Okay, welcome to the special meeting on Wednesday, October 2nd for the Clean Water Commission. It is 6:30. I will take roll call. Brendan?
Here.
Christy?
Here.
Michelle Gertz? Absent. David?
Here.
Sue Marshall has excused absence. Justin? Are they not called in, Alice?
They have not called the conference call yet.
Okay. And Michelle Maynard, they were supposed to call in. And Josh Sheets.
Here.
Thank you. Okay, so we are not going to do any minutes tonight. We'll do that next time. In November. And we have some things on our packet tonight. And before we do in the presentation, any public comments? No, nothing from the public. Okay. Alice, do you want to introduce her?
Sure. We have Devin and Ryan from Department of Ecology, and Sue Marshall with Partnerships has done an extensive interview with Devin and her projects with the East Fork of the Lewis River. And Clean Water Commission was interested in hearing about that and what they're up to. And so Devin was willing to come in and do the presentation tonight. And I'll even just jump ahead a little bit to the partnerships work group update and Sue's notes for the draft of her interview with Devin is in your packet. She was able to send that out today, so that's there. So probably highlight a lot of what she's going to talk about.
So. Great. Thank you. Actually, I wanted to take a moment to introduce Ryan, who will introduce herself, but I wanted to, we have some new leadership at the Vancouver field office, so I thought this was a good opportunity to also bring Ryan along so she could say a little bit about our office and the area we represent in Southwest Washington. So.
Ryan. Yeah, thank you, Devin. I'm really pleased to be able to be here tonight as well. Devin's doing amazing work, and I'm sure you all enjoy her presentation that will be coming up after this. But I wanted to do just a little overview of our Southwest Regional Office. So I am the Vancouver Field Office Manager. Rich, who's unable to join us tonight, but is housed out of Lacey, is our Regional Director for our Southwest Regional Office. And many of you may be familiar with Ecology's mission, but if you're not, it is to protect, preserve, and enhance Washington's environment for current and future generations. We hold that near and dear, as I'm sure many of you do as well. This is the Southwest and Olympic region. So this is the region that our Southwest Regional Office represents. So Pacific Coast, Puget Sound, Hood Canal, Strait of Juan de Fuca, all the way down to the Columbia River. And our regional office covers 12 counties, 68 towns and cities, 13 tribes, and represents roughly 1.8 million people. Yeah. Includes 1,600 miles of marine shoreline, 18 major watersheds, and basically everything in between. We have 9 program areas in our Southwest Regional Office that include water quality, water resources, air quality, spills prevention and response, toxic cleanup, haz waste, shorelands, solid waste, and our environmental assessment program, which is our research arm of the agency. On to the Vancouver Field Office. So as I said, I'm the Vancouver Field Office Manager, and Devin works at our office locally. We have 13 staff there. When we're fully staffed, we'll have 14. We're currently hiring for a municipal stormwater planner. That was the position that I previously held, and that posting is up now. But we have 4 program areas represented in this office. Water quality, a lot of water quality staff in the Vancouver field office. There's a heavy regulatory side of that, which is related to municipal stormwater permitting, construction, and sand and gravel permitting. But we also have forestry staff, and of course Devin, who represents our TMDL efforts out of the office. We also have an air quality staff person, conducts emissions testing, toxics cleanup program staff working heavily on a Ridgefield site right now, and then spills prevention and response, which includes vessel inspectors and spill responders all out of the office. So this is kind of an old picture, but we use it to illustrate we're friendly, we're open, we're ready to hear your needs and concerns, and we do welcome questions and comments. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Devin, who's going to provide the presentation on the East Fork Lewis River Partnership. And all of our contact information will show at the end. So if you have any comments for us, questions, feel free to reach out. But Devin, take it away.
Great. Thank you. And just a quick disclaimer, I apologize. There, I have to scroll through this. It's a PDF instead of a PowerPoint. So if there's any weird glitchiness, that's because I provided a PDF instead. So my name is Devin Rostifer, and I am a TMDL lead, which is also, sometimes I call myself a water quality specialist because most people resonate more with water quality than TMDLs. But I first and foremost just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to come here tonight to talk to you a little bit about the East Fork Lewis River Partnership and water cleanup plan that I've been working on for around 18 months now. I identified the Clark Clean Water Commission early as a group that I would wanted to engage with, and was kind of just waiting for the right opportunity, and happened to meet Sue Marshall through Clark Conservation District work and the board meetings I attend there. And after the interview with her, she was like, you should come and give a presentation. So thank you for having me here tonight. And for those of you who might not be as familiar with the East Fork Lewis River, I'm going to give a little bit of background before I get into the water quality issues and planning efforts that are underway. So the East Fork Lewis River watershed is located in Clark and Skamania counties, mainly in Clark County. The watershed makes up an area of around 235 square miles. It has a variety of land uses with stewarded timberlands in the upper watershed, both state and private and federal lands. The middle watershed has more agricultural, residential, and industrial uses. And then in the lower watershed, you start to see more agriculture and residential development with the cities of La Center and Ridgefield. The mouth of the watershed is at the bridge of at the I-5 and North Fork Lewis River confluence for scale. There are multiple jurisdictions and permits at La Center and Ridgefield, the city of Battleground, and Yakult, and unincorporated Clark County. And the watershed also has significant public access and riparian connectivity through the Clark County Legacy Lands Program, which has established the East Fork Lewis River Greenway over many years. So the East Fork Lewis River is a very valuable natural resource, not only environmentally with the riparian connectivity, but also socially due to the recreation it provides, and economically by attracting both residents and visitors to come to the watershed, and also just the water it provides for municipal and domestic uses. So I mentioned recreation. I keep coming back to here's a photo of Moulton Falls. The watershed is used by many swimmers, anglers. There's campgrounds in the watershed. But the watershed also provides stormwater, wastewater, and drinking water services to the growing population in North Clark County, and also water for agriculture. The East Fork Lewis River is home to the fastest growing city in Washington and some of the fastest growing areas in this county, but also there are five priority Endangered Species Act listed species of salmonids in the watershed and significant recreation. I put this picture in of myself kayaking on the river because I personally have grown to really love working in this watershed. With all of that background, the East Fork Lewis River is on the state of Washington's polluted waters list for temperature and bacteria issues. Temperature impairments are shown in red, where there are temperature and bacteria. You can't really see it on this map, but there, where temperature and bacteria issues are present, those streams are shown in orange, and bacteria issues are shown in yellow. And because the watershed is impaired and on the polluted waters list, which is also known as the 303D list, or there are category 5 waters in this watershed, this drives the need to develop a water cleanup plan. So to study the watershed, the East Fork Lewis River Source Assessment Report was developed, and this was published in May of 2018. And this really serves as the technical foundation and analyzes water quality data collected in 2005 and 2006, and also in 2017. And it makes recommendations where there are critical water cleanup areas and some preliminary recommendations on implementation actions. And this is the foundation for working with the East Fork Lewis River Partnership to develop and implement a water cleanup plan. So from the source assessment, we know that temperatures in the East Fork Lewis River generally increase downstream from the forested upper watershed to the more urbanized lower watershed, with the priorities really being in the middle and lower watersheds from a temperature perspective. In the source assessment, a shade deficit analysis was completed on the main stem East Fork Lewis River, and this shows us where there are the least number of trees in the watershed and where there is the most opportunity for riparian restoration and tree planting projects to increase shade and lower stream temperatures. We also know from the source assessment where there are priority areas to address bacteria. Most of the bacteria issues in the watershed are located in the lower watershed in Breezy Creek, which is the City of LaCenter and unincorporated Clark County's jurisdiction, and then McCormick Creek, which is Ridgefield and Clark County, and then moving into the, you know, upper, lower, and or into the middle watershed, there are also some persisting bacteria issues. And the main or some of the sources of bacteria include septic systems, human sources, small acreage agriculture and livestock, as well as pet. Lots of people have many animals and wildlife as well. So what is the East Fork Lewis River Partnership? When I came into this role and was told to develop a water cleanup plan, I knew there were many people that had been working on the East Fork Lewis River that knew a lot more than me and had a lot of history, and so I thought there was a significant value in engaging governments and watershed groups and nonprofits through a partnership to co-develop the plan and establish priorities together. So this East Fork Lewis River Partnership was launched in August of 2018. I started at Ecology in May of 2018. And since the partnership has launched, we've had over 50 different individuals from 30 organizations engage in partnership activities, which have mainly been planning and program and project development. So you can't see this too well, but here's a table showing some of the stakeholders. So lots of representation from Clark County Clean Water and Community Development has attended a meeting in the past, Clark County Public Health, the cities, school districts, Cowlitz Indian Tribe, state, federal, and many of our nonprofit local partners, as well as some private entities as well. So we've had full partnership meetings. We've hosted these at the community center in the City of LaCenter. And we've also had temperature and bacteria specific meetings. And then early on in this process, assistance for private landowners with water quality challenges or opportunities for water quality improvement projects on their properties. That was identified as a huge need. And as many of you know, the conservation district's capacity has decreased significantly over time. When I started, they had one staff person. So there was a lot of early discussion in the context and still ongoing discussion in the context of bacteria pollution regarding how do we provide private landowners in Clark County with technical assistance and financial resources. Additionally, to start thinking about implementation, we hosted a grant project development workshop in May. This is the first, it was a pilot workshop, and this was developed out of our Southwest region because we felt there could be benefit in providing early project development support and just general technical assistance on how to navigate Ecology's grant programs and develop a competitive grant application. We also held an outreach and education, some outreach and education activities. We had a public town hall in June in the City of LaCenter that was attended by 54 people at the LaCenter Grange. And we also had a community coffee as well. And it was highlighted by both the Columbian and the Reflector, which was really nice to establish those media relations, for positive press and to kind of invite the public. So what has all of this led to? The development of a water cleanup plan, which is also interchangeably referred to as a TMDL alternative. And TMDL alternatives are a new tool that is being implemented in the state of Washington to develop water cleanup plans. There are 9-element watershed plans that rely on voluntary implementation, strong partnership development, and early coordination. And they're being used a lot more in watersheds that are predominantly rural and have non-point source issues where you can't necessarily prescribe a waste load allocation because the pollution sources are non-point.
Devin, can I ask a quick question?
So
is that going to be a plan that would lead to the listing being changed to Category 4B? Is it a 4B plan?
I think those conversations are happening. That's to be determined.
Okay.
And we can talk a little bit more about that after, if you would like. But thanks. That's a good question. So what are the clean water priorities that have been identified through the East Fork Lewis River Partnership? The four priorities, and I'll talk a little bit more about each of these, are septic systems, small acreage agriculture, riparian restoration, and storm water management. And one of the things that this plan does is establish a clean water vision, because really the goal of developing this plan is to ensure that the East Fork Lewis River is swimmable, drinkable, fishable, and that water quality standards are met to support aquatic life and recreational uses, because elevated bacteria levels increase risk to public health, to swimmers, and warm water temperatures produce threats to the salmon that many of us love. So to achieve this clean water vision, this is a really big goal. The goal would be to eliminate the impacts of septic systems and small acreage agriculture on water quality in the East Fork Lewis River. And I know that's a big goal, but you got to start with a vision. With riparian forest restoration, the goal is to achieve system riparian vegetation, which is 85% tree canopy in the watershed. That was calculated by our research arm at Ecology. Also, stormwater management, achieving a high level of stormwater management both in the permitted and non-permitted portions of the watershed. And public education and outreach is a big component of this as well. And working to educate the public to inspire behavior change and help individuals understand how their actions contribute to clean water. So this is where I'm going to get into a little more of the nitty-gritty. So septic systems were identified as an early priority, and additional outreach to septic system owners to increase inspection and then corresponding maintenance and repair is a priority in the East Fork Lewis River watershed. So currently, there are 34,500 septic systems in Clark County, and 30% of these, or just over 10,000, have not been inspected. So as many of you may know, in Clark County, septic system inspections are voluntary. They are recommended on every 3 years basis, and homeowners can attend a workshop to self-inspect their systems on an every other cycle. So every other 3 years, homeowners can become certified to do their own self-inspection. This is a map, and in orange, this shows the tax lots in the East Fork Lewis River that currently have septic system permits, whether or not those have been built or not, or are impending to be built. I can't verify that with certainty, but as you can see, there are a significant you can see from this map, just with the data visualization, there are a lot of septic systems in the watershed. There are wastewater services in some of the more urbanized area, but there's definitely still an opportunity where there might be septic system owners that aren't connected to wastewater services that could be, and also additional outreach to make sure that we get non-inspected septic systems inspected. So here's a map of the lower watershed. Here is Le Center, and here is Ridgefield. And shown in green are septic systems that are current on their inspections. And shown in red are septic systems that are not current or have not been inspected. So there is a significant number. So through a draft grant proposal that was recently submitted to me, it was determined that there are just over 6,000 septic systems in the watershed. Almost 2,000 have not been inspected. Through some work with the partners, it was determined that an average inspection cost is around $120, which you could, an average cost to achieve 100% septic system inspection in the East Fork Lewis River is close to $232,000. And what's really the value of getting these systems inspected is really to help understand the age and condition of the systems, which can help help with understanding maintenance and replacement or repair needs, and to really help prioritize septic system repair. Also, by getting septic systems inspected, it can help connect homeowners to certain financial resources for maintenance or repair. There are regional loan programs such as the CRAC 3 regional loan program where homeowners can qualify for financial assistance for septic repair. There's also some local sources, I believe, and U.S. Department of Agriculture sources. So actions established in the plan are for inspection, maintenance, repair, replacement, connecting to sewer when possible, and additional public education and outreach on septic systems. Challenges: limited staff capacity locally to take this on. There's a lot of septic system and not a lot of staff. Also, that it's voluntary and not mandatory makes it challenging. There are not enough septic workshops. All the septic workshops to learn how to self-inspect your system this year were completely maxed out. There are waiting lists. They can't accommodate. The upcoming one in December, there's no room, which is great, but it shows that there's not enough. There's a lot of demand and not enough supply for that assistance. They're also really expensive to repair and replace, and getting willing homeowners that want to take this on is a challenge, as well as enforcement and the enforcement element of requiring somebody to potentially make that sort of investment. So moving on, second priority in the watershed is small acreage agriculture, specifically livestock. There's a need in the watershed for more conservation planning, because really that's the foundation for both the state and federal funding sources to be able to give funding for BMP implementation. Technical and as well as technical assistance in BMP implementation in general is a priority. So agriculture in Clark County, as many of you know, and what I recently learned, there are lots of dairies. I think I heard almost 200 at one point in Clark County, and there aren't that many now. However, data from the U.S. Department of Agricultural Census says that there are still close to 2,000 farms that are on average 46 acres each in Clark County. And results, this is landowners, livestock owners submit this information. There are still significant livestock in Clark County watersheds, as well as more orchards and wineries. So although there might not be the big producers, the dairies, there are still people who have horses, cows, sheep, and goats that are having an impact on watersheds.
Real quickly, is that just counting what classifies as those animal totals, or what classifies as a farm under that acreage? So it's not counting all of your like 5-acre lots that might have livestock on them as well.
This is from the census survey. All they give is number of farms and number of reported livestock.
The National Agricultural Survey.
And this is specifically though for Clark County, Washington. This is the Washington USDA Agricultural Census from 2017.
I live in a part of rural Washougal area that's mostly 5-acre, 10-acre lots out there, and it sounds like a barnyard
on your
outside.
Really?
Yeah.
So kind of nice.
Are these commercial farms, or are these any operation that's farming?
That's a good question. I think the census breaks that down, because there is information about financial value associated with sales. I just am not representing that data here.
Okay, because I get this survey every year. I've got slightly over 2 acres, and I always have sheep and chickens and orchard and vegetable garden, and I don't know how they figured it out, but they sent the survey, and I responded the first time I got it, and I get it every year. So if it's for Clark County, I think this is also going to include homesteads if it's from the National Agricultural Statistical Service.
All I know is that I recently heard in a conservation district meeting that there's another one out, and they're like, make sure you fill it out because it has a lot to do with dedicating resources to local agencies for assistance.
So I think this does include, assume the smaller, like 5 acre, 2 acre, 10 acre, as long as they respond to the survey.
Sorry, I couldn't give you a better
answer. So I was just thinking there's probably a lot more.
There's probably a lot more.
Yeah, so that's what I was just thinking too. We've got, my parents have just moved here with 2 acres and a horse. So,
nice.
Like, with all the smaller farms and everything, it would definitely add up quickly.
So what I do know, as you mentioned, producers, is there is one small dairy with manure application in the East Fork Lewis River. They're under the Department of Ag's Dairy Nutrient Management Act, and then there's one egg-laying facility that is under food safety program. There are no concentrated animal feeding operations, but as you know, it sounds like we all are very familiar. There's lots of people with horses and alpaca, and even, you know, people in this urbanizing Vancouver area that have chickens in their yard. Small agriculture is definitely growing and out there. So to address and to help investigate agricultural non-point source issues, Ecology has prioritized the East Fork Lewis River for proactive non-point source investigation and implementation. So shown here are two postcards, which were mailers sent out by our non-point source staff to tell landowners that they were working in the watershed to find potential water quality issues. So from the source assessment, we know that the highest bacteria levels in the watershed are located in the headwaters of McCormick Creek, and this is in the city of Richfield. So this led to our non-point source staff going out in the field, and they found this big, bubbling, abandoned manure lagoon. And this is an old dairy that transferred ownership and is now currently becoming a subdivision, but the challenge really was figuring out how to ensure that this was appropriately decommissioned and not discharging to surface waters. So, we had a meeting with the city of Richfield, the engineering firm, the developers. I was out there in a hard hat, and we were able to provide technical assistance on how to stabilize this site through wet weather. And hopefully, we don't know yet, we won't know until we conduct effectiveness monitoring. This very likely could have been a large source of bacteria that was contributing to the issues in McCormick Creek. So fingers crossed we found and fixed it, but I will also say there are many septic systems and other agriculture in this drainage, so we can't with confidence say we fixed it yet. But our non-point source staff have really been working on building relationships to do joint site visits with Clark County Public Health, to do joint site visits with Clark County Code Enforcement, referring when possible and when the conservation district has capacity, which isn't very often, quite frankly, to refer landowners to the conservation district. But a big focus has really been relationship building and building trust. And
so, Devin, what was done to remedy this?
What was done? Okay, so through our construction stormwater permit, they were able to require a stormwater pollution prevention plan be required specific for the manure lagoon. And because they were past the time where you could land apply it, because that was one option, they stabilized the manure lagoon using traditional construction stabilization practices, and then were able to eventually add soil and till it in, and they were given options of where the right soils were where they could land apply it. There was discussion about trucking it to other farms for beneficial use. But ultimately, it was kind of diluted with soil and turned into the earth, but it was important to make sure it got stabilized before the rainy season so you didn't get a huge flush of bacteria.
One of the problems with the areas that have large-scale manure is you know, the production of methane and the release of bacteria and all the other associated things. In Europe, they take a slightly different approach. A large number of the smaller scale or medium scale farms actually implement the use of small scale digesters to produce energy that can actually be used for heating and cooking and all kinds of other things. How much emphasis are we putting on taking that kind of approach and working with farms or farmers or ranchers so that they have that opportunity, which benefits us because then the bacteria and all that doesn't flow downstream, right?
Yeah, manure management is something that our funding programs can pay for. I'm not sure if they pay. Digesters are very expensive, but when you're talking about providing technical and financial assistance directly to farmers, ecology relies heavily on local conservation districts to be able to serve as that liaison, to use NRCS specifications to work with and provide those solutions to local farmers. Additionally, ecology can't directly pay a farmer to implement a best practice. We need a government or nonprofit entity in between to receive the funds and distribute them out. So if there was a farmer interested in an anaerobic digester in Clark County, I would likely refer them to the Clark Conservation District or NRCS. However, NRCS has one person covering the Lower Columbia, and Clark Conservation District has three staff people. So it's hard without a strong local entities that can provide that technical assistance to make progress.
I'm aware of somebody that's acutely connected to that world. Who is there a person in ecology that's a good contact for him?
I will definitely. We can chat a little bit more, and if it's not one of us, then we can find the person or someone locally. Yes.
Yeah. Because I know he's been talking about this publicly and trying to pursue avenues towards better management of this type of pollution in a better way.
Yeah.
For some time, and I know that he's aware of other investment communities that actually see it as a beneficial, you know, symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, we can definitely talk more about that. Thank you for bringing that up.
Question, how long did this, long ago did this dairy shut down?
Oh, that is a good question. I am unsure, but what I can say is that this was a really unique case study for all of us to work through. How do you ensure when a dairy goes from Department of Ag jurisdiction to new development, how do you ensure that these types of bacteria issues are managed appropriately, and that's something we're talking about internally, because you might see this a lot more. So I know I'm getting short on time, so I'm going to keep moving through here. But priorities for agriculture are, again, that proactive investigation, conducting site visits, providing technical assistance and conservation planning services, interchangeably farm planning services, public education and outreach, and implementing livestock BMPs to prevent pollution to surface waters. One thing that local entities are currently working on is the development of a formal pollution identification and correction program to address septic systems and agricultural impacts through a new program that they're calling Poop Smart Clark. So, but I can tell you this is a proposal. But so Clark County Clean Water, Clark County Public Health, the Conservation District, Watershed Alliance, and Washington State University Extension are working together to develop this program, which really focuses on using monitoring and land use assessment to identify sources of pollution, and which can ultimately support long-term correction. So these programs usually include a source identification component, outreach to landowners, septic and then corresponding septic system implementation and livestock implementation. And what I can say is Poop Smart Clark is actually a program. Poop Smart comes out of Skagit County. It's been very successful at getting private landowner willingness. They've the conservation district has helped them grow significantly. It's also helped educate and kind of bring some humor to actually talking about the fact that human, dog, and agricultural waste all. We all poop. Everyone poops. So the schematic, one outline that kind of shows how this proposed program works is shown here. So the source identification is really through assessment, microbial source tracking, which some of you may have read about. The county's done a little bit of that. Land use assessment and a septic system records assessment, and really using all of those things to target specific sources, so then education and outreach resources can be targeted more directly and appropriately. Then there's the source correction piece, and a component of, and then ultimately monitoring to see if the problem has been fixed. So there is a K-9s for clean water part of this. Many of you are probably familiar with this existing program. There are 110,000 dogs in Clark County contributing 13,000 tons of poop per year to Clark County watersheds. So part of the proposed PIC program is to also do more proactive outreach on K-9s for clean water as well. So again, all of this has not been funded, but what I can say is watching this program come to development and seeing all the groups start to talk together about a framework to address bacteria has been really inspirational and I think really positive. So I'm hoping that a funding source is secured for this program. What I can say is they've started reaching out to landowners and have had a survey. So if you know anybody who's interested in potential projects for streamside planning, livestock exclusion fencing, mud management, there's a wide array of things that the Conservation District could do, but having shovel-ready projects and willing landowners is key for them being able to secure funding as well.
So your streamside planting, is that mostly on the private land?
Private and public. And I'm going to get into trees next.
Oh.
So. I mentioned some of the challenges related to agriculture. I'm sure you all know that well following the history, but there has been limited funding and local funding support for conservation district programs. So really a lot of their programs have been opportunistic in response to not really being able to have a base source of funding to move forward. They kind of rely on grants. So I see, yes.
You have landowner willingness on there. How has your experience been with landowners in getting some of these projects started?
So I can only speak from what I hear from my partners that do the door knocking and the conservation district. So some of the things I hear from my ecology partners is a lot of people don't want ecology showing up on their doorstep, and it takes a lot for them to even get people to trust them. There's a lot of slam the door in your face. I mean, we are the government. A lot of people don't want us on their property. The conservation district, what I often hear from them is that they'll have somebody come to them who wants help, but since they only have pots of money that are from grants that require them to do certain things, they can't help everybody because there isn't base funding to just provide general technical assistance. Either it's assigned to a certain program or assigned to a certain watershed, and that's been kind of a challenge. So they've had to turn some people away.
So we'll have to get badges on their shirts that cover up the Department of Ecology and Conservation.
We can't do that.
That was exactly our experience with watersheds in... I'm from Virginia, and on the western side of Virginia where I went to college, we are covered in poultry farms, and we had the same issue, and it was a lot of door slamming in your face. So,
and some of
that's very curious.
Yeah, some of us, that's part of the reason we've tried to get things out on social media or get things out in the newspaper and just try to host these right. town halls to maybe kind of, and when I talk to people in the watershed, I try to talk about the things that they can do. And, you know, if you want to work with the conservation district, they're a non-regulatory entity that can help provide you technical and financial assistance.
It's not an inspection, it's help.
Yeah, exactly, because achieving voluntary compliance is really what we would like to see. And that's kind of my next slide, is I see, so you can't see it totally, but there's all these enforcement related programs. There's the Department of Ag's Dairy Nutrient Management Act, there's the Clark County Agricultural Ordinance, there's the Septic System Code, there's concentrated animal feeding operation permits, there's Ecology's 9048, which prevents all discharges to surface water through our Water Pollution Control Act. And all of that applies to both public and private landowners, but we really see organizations like the Conservation District and nonprofit watershed groups as a conduit to helping private landowners come into compliance without having to go through formal enforcement or fines. And really, organizations locally, strong organizations that can help landowners address their water quality issues and achieve voluntary compliance. It's hard for us to be successful and get to clean water without that local support. So that's a big barrier for us. So one thing that I would ask you all to do is we do have an environmental incidents reporting website. You are the eyes and ears of Clark County's watershed. So you can, if you see something that is bad for water quality, you can report it online using a form. You can report it on email. You can call and report it too. But this not only triggers Ecology to respond, it also gets distributed out to the appropriate agency, whether it be Fish and Wildlife or Clark County, to respond to the complaint. I am just eating up time here, so I'm going to try to speed up. Repairing forest restoration is a priority. What's unique about the East Fork Lewis River, though, is that there already has been significant work done. There is over 2,000 acres of publicly owned land in the watershed, both from Clark County and Columbia Land Trust, and I believe there are 9,000 acres planned for acquisition in the watershed as well. The Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership has done significant work in the lower watershed. They've improved over 600 acres on 10 miles of river. And they are also currently working on developing restoration alternatives for the Ridgefield pits, which are historical surface gravel mining pits where the river evolved into. And they're developing alternatives but have not secured funding for implementation, but will be down the line. And the goal is to, this is a very warm area of the river, but it's very critical for fish, so the goal is to provide cold water habitat for salmonids. The LSEP is also planning to complete a thermal assessment of the watershed to try to find those natural cold areas where they can protect and enhance them for fish use, and hopefully with this project developing restoration alternatives as well. And even though I believe they're targeting funding in this next fiscal year, I think they may have already been successful receiving funding through the Recreation Conservation Organization in Washington. Clark Public Utilities District has done a ton of work. They've done work on, they have funding now currently for a project that has not started on McCormick Creek to do some stream bank stabilization and tree planting. They've done work on Lockwood Creek. They've done work on a property we refer to as Zimmerly. They've also done a lot of invasive species control in the watershed. Jeff Whitler, if you know him, he's done great work with AmeriCorps crews through the stream team. Great working with private landowners. He works with correctional crews. They've done a lot of work in the watershed. Another thing that you guys might have on your radar right now is the Lower Daybreak Master Plan. I believe there's funding secured for recreational improvements, but I will say that this area is where we have some of the largest shade deficits in the watershed, shade deficits of 40%. And as you can see from this aerial photo, this is the south bank of the river. There's pretty bad erosion here, and stabilizing the stream bank and adding trees is a priority in the master plan. I don't believe that it's currently happening in this funding round or this stage of the project yet, but this is something that both the county has prioritized and we would also prioritize through the clean water plan for future work. Challenges. So there's been great success on public land. There's definitely a need for work on private land. Working on private lands to implement tree projects again. You have to get that landowner willingness. It's challenging in general. You can't, it's hard to use volunteers. There's just lots of barriers to working on private lands, but a need, there is a need for private landowner tree planting work in the East Fork Lewis River. And while there's been lots of work on the main stem, the tributaries are kind of a blank slate. There's a lot of work that still needs to be done and a lot of information that still needs to be collected on the tributaries. So finally, storm water management. From the source assessment, we know that there is a large source of bacteria in the watershed that is coming from a City of La Center stormwater outfall, and that an 86 to 91% dry season reduction of bacteria is needed to meet water quality standards. So saying this, though, the City of La Center is a non-permitted jurisdiction to have a stormwater permit. You have to have 10,000 people. They're not there yet. So anything on stormwater management in La Center is a voluntary activity at this time. So knowing that there's a dry season bacteria issue, that, you know, bacteria is consistently 6 times higher than the water quality standard, and 100% of samples do not meet the bacteria standard. So there's definitely an issue. When you see dry season bacteria, that usually means there's a direct source of bacteria. So early on, I approached City of La Center. I love working with them. They're a great community. They're growing. They're aspirational. I had some conversations with them, and through routine stormwater maintenance, they actually identified multiple illicit cross connections where sanitary was directly connected to storm. They self-reported, and Ryan actually received and helped facilitate responding to that complaint. And they worked with Clark Regional for televising, and they worked with Clark County Public Health to put in temporary sanitary facilities for the homeowners, and they were able to get those issues fixed. The challenge is there were newer developments, and so as a growing community, though, you know, there's some growing pains of building new subdivisions, and so the city has recognized that there's a need to incorporate different development codes and standards to prevent those types of issues down the line, and they are being very thoughtful on that. And to ensure all connections are good before occupancy. Additionally, the city has just adopted a stormwater utility, so they will be collecting a local source of funding for stormwater to support capital improvements and asset management down the road. So what we prioritize, or what has been prioritized in the East Fork Lewis River for stormwater management, is additional illicit discharge detection and elimination programs, source control activities to address bacteria and temperature land uses, or bacteria and temperature issues that might be coming from certain land uses or business types, stormwater management planning and mapping, education and outreach, and partnerships. And so all of these activities are things that permitted entities, Clark County and Battleground, have to do in the watershed already. But again, both La Center and Ridgefield, as non-permitted entities, this would all be voluntary. But what I can say, really positive, is that La Center is looking to develop a comprehensive, proactive stormwater management plan, and they're seeking financial support through competitive grant funding to do that. So I'm hoping, again, that they're successful in that endeavor, because that would be a huge win for the East Fork Lewis River. Finally, public education and outreach. There's lots of things. I could talk forever about this, but I'm not going to tonight. But I can say that so Clark County Clean Water is a major sponsor of Washington State University Extension Small Acres Program. And early conversations with Eric Lambert and Andrea and Jeff and Rod and everybody has really led to the Small Acreage Program prioritizing the East Fork for outreach in 2019. So they sent 1,000 direct mailings to residents to advertise their various workshops, both the well and septic workshop, like I mentioned. That's sold out. There's standing room only for that. And they're also having a composting manure workshop on October 30th. What I have heard from talking with Doug, who manages this program, is that since doing this outreach and hosting the town hall in the watershed, he's seen more residents from the area sign up to participate in these programs. So that, I think that's positive because that's the behavior change inspiration. So how do you know if you're making, how do you know if we're fixing the problem? So there is a monitoring and adaptive management component to this. So ecology is planning and continuing to do some investigative monitoring as non-point source staff are out in the watershed. Also, the local pollution identification program that's proposed is proposing to do some sampling as they're out looking for sources of bacteria. Clark County has been developing a stream health report, which will be published in 2020. They've been collecting data over the course of a year, including new E. coli data. And there will be an implementation tracking component of this because in order to really understand if we're making change, understanding what's going on the ground is key. And long-term effectiveness monitoring will have to happen when that happens, if it's 5 years or 10 years or opportunistically. That's to be determined, but that is a big part of this, as well as putting out progress reports and if something isn't working, revisiting it and adapting. So just a final plug, ecology does have funding for water quality. Our applications are due October 15th. What I can say is that multiple entities locally are putting together proposals, and a lot of those are in the East Fork, which is great. We pay for stormwater, non-point source activities, and then we also have funding for wastewater and drinking water. If you're interested in that, I can connect you to the right people, or I can talk a little bit about non-point source, or we have a stormwater grants manager actually in the Vancouver field office. So if you want to stay up to date, there's a website, and then I have a webpage where I have all of our meeting materials and presentations. I'll also be speaking on this topic at the American Planning Association Conference in Tacoma on October 16th, so very soon, and then at River Restoration Northwest in February 2020. We are beginning to study Burnt Bridge Creek for our next source assessment. That is scheduled to be complete at the end of 2020 with a water cleanup plan following. And then if you want to know more about water quality in Clark County watersheds, we have this online mapping tool called the Water Quality Atlas, where you can go and look at which water bodies are polluted for which pollutants, and shown in red are the Category 5 polluted waters in Clark County, and I'm happy to help you navigate this if you want to learn more. So on behalf of my dog, Oliver, who's a canine for clean water, he took the scoop your poop pledge, which means I have to scoop his poop. I just wanted to say thank you again. I know I went a little bit over, a lot over, but at this time, we're happy to take, if there is time, questions. Happy to take questions on the East Fork, and Ryan's also here if there are questions generally on the Southwest region and Vancouver field office.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank
you.
I have a couple questions. I'll maybe be quick. So on the septic systems, near stream septic systems can discharge bacteria even if they're functioning properly through the shallow groundwater. So is that something that's being identified and prioritized for remediation efforts?
I mean, that's
bacteria side?
Good point. I know what I can say is that should be prioritized, and that through the Pollution Identification and Correction Program, Clark County Public Health and partners is going to develop the prioritization system. I'm glad that you brought that up because that's not something that I've been thinking about really, but proximity to surface waters is certainly something that should be considered in a prioritization framework.
And then on temperature, since we spend a lot of time on this one in Oregon, it looked like the priority area was the mid for riparian restoration was kind of the middle watershed, and so is that going to be primarily focused around larger streams, or is it going to be focused on tributaries? I'm thinking, so we do a lot of temperature modeling in Oregon, and a lot of times, you know, once they get to a certain width, riparian shade doesn't do much, but those smaller tributaries that can be fully or almost fully shaded are where you can get the most control over the heat loads through shading. So I'm just kind of wondering how that's going to look.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So the highest shade deficits are in the middle watershed. So there's still a lot of opportunity to increase riparian vegetation. The challenge with the middle watershed is that it's very dynamic. It migrates, it's splashy, there's a lot of erosion. So some challenges are related to, you know, stream bank stabilization and, you know, if you put trees in, is the river going to take them out sort of thing. There's some other geomorphological challenges in the middle watershed. But with that said, understanding opportunities in the tributaries is identified as an early priority. What we don't have is the same shade deficit analysis completed for the TRIBS. That's something that we would like to see a local entity potentially consider taking on. And that, yes, private landowner tree planting in the tributaries is definitely a priority. You know, just speaking about what I think a lot of people have taken on the main stem because of the public lands, and it's a lot easier to work on public lands restoration than private lands. And there's more connectivity and larger.
And the source assessment document would say how the shade deficits were measured.
Mm-hmm. And
so
we can share.
Rather than bothering you about that, I can just go look that up.
Yeah, and we have, I can always connect you to the woman who did it. She has like a spreadsheet and all these things. Mm-hmm. I know she shared it with other partners who want to replicate it in Oregon. Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership is like, we want to do this work elsewhere. So it's something that can be shared. It's public. Everything's public.
Josh took my question on septics. I was curious about that, just assessing them geographically in relation to streams. One thing I was wondering is, given the fact that LaCenter and Ridgefield in particular have been, as you mentioned, fastest, incredibly mm-hmm. fast growing areas, is there any conversation going on or anything with the development that is projected to happen in relation to mitigations for that, so that you're not constantly playing catch up?
The main conversations I can speak to, I've had more conversations with LaCenter just because it's a bacteria, that drainage is a bacteria priority. A lot of the conversations that I've had with the city is on the value of proactively investing in stormwater and planning for stormwater needs, knowing that they'll likely be coming into permit compliance. And you can speak this, but oftentimes it's a lot more affordable to be prepared, to have a plan in place, than to fully build out and have to retrofit or adapt or develop the plan when you suddenly come under coverage. And I don't know if you want to say anything in relation to that, but that's how I've framed a lot of my conversations with that community.
Yeah, these are the kind of conversations we try to have with unpermitted jurisdictions who are facing development pressure, that the retrofit is always going to be more expensive on the back end. And the cost of the taxpayer makes it a much more palatable argument when figuring out how progressive you're going to be on your stormwater policy, even though initially it is most certainly an expensive, time-consuming endeavor. Every permitted entity in this area knows that to be the case. But we talk about this a lot in this area because of the growth. Same conversations happening with the city of Ridgefield.
How close are they to hitting that permit threshold?
Ridgefield is much closer than LaCenter is. The next permit cycle starts in 2024. We just issued the municipal stormwater permit this summer.
That's too bad with all those apartments and houses going into Ridgefield right now.
It didn't quite hit the population threshold, so we couldn't bring them under coverage in this current round. Most likely the census will show that they are very close. And by the time those assessments, those population estimates would be done, we get those through our Office of Financial Management at the state. They do population estimates annually. By the time those come around and we're doing that for the stormwater permits, Ridgefield will likely.
Right. Probably by 2024, you might expect both of them to hit that threshold with the rate of growth.
I can't recall the center's population.
I think they...
But they're further off than Ridgefield.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Crazy the amount of growth.
Staggering. Yeah.
I have one question, just completely personal interest. Do you know more about this river restoration thing that's happening in February?
River Restoration Northwest?
Yeah.
That's an annual conference hosted by River Restoration Northwest. It's February 4th to 7th, and it's at Skamania Lodge, and it's great. It's a lot of, there's national people there. A lot of local organizations, too, heavily attended by the consulting community. A lot of geomorphology, but then there's other things as well.
So. If I just look up that title, is it probably in there?
Yes, you'll get it. And they have presentation nights. I think tomorrow night they actually have, like, a film thing happening in Portland. So It's an active group of water professionals in this area.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. Back to the tree planting. So on the private lands, you know, why are people not seeing the value to do that? Is it the money or the time?
You know, it's hard to pinpoint it to one thing. I mean, a lot of people like to have their view of the water. So that's a challenge. So some of it is educating on the benefit to salmon or the benefit to protecting your property from erosion or flooding. It's really challenging. Also, through if it's paid for through ecology's funding programs, there's some maintenance requirements and things that sometimes people don't want to be involved with. But again, it's always just trying to talk about that value proposition. So if you know willing and people, we want them because that's the biggest challenge is finding people who want these types of projects.
So I don't know if you're familiar with the upper reaches of Salmon Creek, but it seems to me that some of the issues that you're looking at and Stork are very similar to what's going on in the upper reaches of salmon. Is that true?
What I can say is I feel like a lot of the things that are being recommended for the East Fork can apply countywide to multiple watersheds. Mm-hmm. A lot of it, the recommendations have to do with local capacity, local programs. Salmon Creek has an approved TMDL. It's older, but one of the things on my, when I have time, one of my priorities for my work is to revisit that implementation plan and see if there are opportunities to update the implementation plan for Salmon Creek. Because I know there's also been a lot of great work there, so I think I also really enjoy celebrating success, and I think it would be nice to kind of do a what's happened in Salmon Creek for 10 years. Thank you all.
Thank you.
You'll let us know if you have any other questions. Follow us, and there's our contact information, but I have business cards if you want to give us a call.
Real quickly, you did say that Burnbridge Creek is next. Is there any type of long-term hope to just kind of continue that, jumping from watershed to watershed in the county, or is it?
So we're in a process of choosing where we will go next. And some early kind of low-hanging fruit that have been discussed are Lacamas Creek, up where it's the drainage coming into Lacamas
above
Lake,
above
the lake. There was data collected, and there was a TMDL in development for a long time, I believe as back to 2012. I've also, there's been a lot of interest from local partners in working in the Washougal, but quite frankly, that watershed hasn't been assessed by ecology, so issues in Washougal are somewhat unknown. So there's been conversation around there, but also I understand that Whipple and G Creeks are priorities to the county. There's tons of information on those creeks, so maybe not a full exhaustive source assessment, but it would be interesting for us to internally kind of get up to speed and understand what the implementation priorities are there.
Yeah, it would be great to see this type of thing mapped out over the rest of the world.
Yeah, so Salmon, East Fork, Burnbridge, so really it's, we got Lacamas, Washougal, and then the West Slope watersheds would be kind of, I would love to see Clark County get finished, but I failed to mention that I do cover the Chehalis Basin south to Skamania County.
You were already looking at having two of you doing what you're doing with this. And so, Chehalis, that's a whole
that's
other.
All, yeah. Thank you again.
Thank you. Okay, you want to hang out for the rest of our meeting?
I think I will excuse myself.
Parking's free.
I'll probably hang out.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Ryan. And definitely if you want to know more about construction stormwater or our spills program, definitely
reach out to Ryan. To any of our staff in the office.
Thank you for coming.
We're very lucky to have Devin, so yeah, please get in touch with him.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your promotion, by the way.
Thank you, Josh.
Appreciate that. Yeah. I love working in the stormwater world, but it's a great opportunity, and I look forward to being able to help lead the office into the future with great staff like Devin and everybody else. So thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So the next thing on our agenda is the Heritage Farms letter.
And this was a late-breaking deal that didn't get on the original agenda that sent out, and so I sent it out. Marley in our office is applying for a Department of Ecology grant that is for the Heritage Farm Headwater Wetlands Channel Restoration at Cougar Creek. It's her grant. And she was hoping that the Clean Water Commission would do a letter of support for that project. It's due next week. It's probably one of those October 15th ones, so they've got to get it off by like the 10th or something like that, I think. So if that is something that you are interested in doing, I did draft up a sample letter, and if you want to do it and approve of it and you like the letter, we can go from there. Or if you want changes, I can get that done and we can get it off to Marie if that's something you want to do. So it's whatever your pleasure.
I read through it and liked it, so if I can go directly to making a motion to approve it, I would. But I want further conversation.
Yeah, there are two things. One is that this is something Pat Lee and I had talked about, you know, when we met, and it's really along the lines of, you know, the way that we endorse the master plan for Heritage Farms. So it's just totally consistent with what we've been doing to date. And yeah, I think the letter's great. I think this is great. There were just two small pieces. In the second paragraph where you say the naturally forested land cover throughout the Salmon Creek watershed, I think it would be really strong if you mentioned that that's a salmonid-bearing stream. That might be something that is being looked for, because with Cougar Creek flowing into it, that will only increase the water quality in that stream as well. And then towards the end of that same paragraph, suggested stream health strategies include increasing infiltration, retention, and surface water storage throughout the watershed. And I would suggest adding, after surface water storage, - all functions provided by wetlands, - and then the rest of it, to tie it back into the restoration of the stream corridor, wetlands, and the importance of it in the watershed. Otherwise, I think it's great.
Okay.
David, Josh, and Christy, any comments?
I like it. And I did use the letter that you wrote for the Heritage Farm Master Plan as a lot of inspiration. Yeah. So I did try to use the same verbiage and a lot of the same tone so that it kept very similar to previous correspondence and support letters that you've done.
Do you think we can approve it just with those changes?
I frankly think that since the primary function is to support support the project, I think it's actually fine the way it is, without having to, you know, get into wordsmithing it and creating other nuances to it, because they're in the process of making a decision, and as is fine for that emphasis, because the application itself is going to get into the details and the weeds without us necessarily getting into the nuances. So I'm okay with it the way it is.
I like it with or without Michelle's suggested changes. I like Michelle's suggested changes. But it's a good letter. You put this together?
Yeah.
Nice. Good job.
I got
I was all prepared to nitpick, and I got nothing.
I got the impression that just adding those would be relatively simple if we motion to approve as amended.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I will email them to you. If you can sign, scan, and send it back, then I can get it to the appropriate staff.
Yes.
They will be very happy.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you all.
You're welcome.
Okay, next on our agenda is the working group updates. Do we have anything from our research?
We are working on scheduling a get-together around when Michelle is or isn't on a plane.
Okay.
Well, I think there's a tentative conversation about next Monday, was it? She mentioned this
It was supposed to be today, and then she...
Yeah, and then she suggested a time coming when they're coming back, okay. So we should have an update. So.
By the November meeting.
By our next meeting, we should have something to report.
In partnerships, I don't think we have anything yet. Are you going to be able to attend the Stormwater Partnerships Group, the meeting?
Yeah, that's in November.
November. So
it's in mid-November, so I should be able to go to that.
Okay. And anyway, so nothing more from us.
And then Sue has her...
her notes are here. So, and I need to send out the... I did send that out. I sent out the list of all of the priorities that we've written thus far for people to talk about. So we'll try to get together, try to figure out which ones people are going to focus on next.
Okay. And I have nothing from outreach since I'm the only person in the group. So we'll move on to staff liaison report.
Just a couple little things. The clean water manager position hasn't been posted yet. We are supposed to be getting a new parks manager coming on board at the end of the month, correct? Or is it?
End of October. Yes, yeah. So it would be the end of the month, yes.
And I know you're all very excited, but the new water year started yesterday. So, Happy New Year!
What I was excited about is how much we caught up in September. I was actually amazed because we were like 40% down, and then we caught up to just like 30% down.
And Ben was actually commenting. We went out and did a couple ITI and the bug survey, and we were. He was talking about how there are some on the east slope of the Cascades, there are several stations that have received over 6 inches of rain in September, so they've gotten a lot of rain just recently, so it's helping some of that precipitation deficit that they've been having. So
we saw them out on Highway 99 checking the station like 2 days ago. I don't know what they're doing. My husband was not that interested.
Actually, Chad took me out. It's really cool.
The 4-year-old was.
Well, there you go. Next generation.
Yeah. And I believe Jenna Kay for the Shoreline Comprehensive Plan will most likely present in January. I know we've got a lot on the table for November. Jeff is coming back, and he will be presenting the new proposed 6-year comprehensive plan. I know he gave you the old one, and now the new one. Actually, he presented today to the council, and I think he's going to come talk to you as well. There are applications for the 2020 commissioners for here on the Clean Water Commission. We just opened it up about a little over a week ago. Currently, 2 commissioners have indicated they would like to be considered for another term. So please feel free to encourage people you know who would be a good addition to the board. They need to submit their cover letter and resume to Greg's attention to the Maine Clean Water Commission email. It's on our website, and it went out to a number of different public places. And And I think that is pretty much everything that has this going on. And we wanted to get in your packet, we have the code references that were the code changes that we're going to be proposing, and we wanted to get your comments on them. So I'll just, I don't know if Greg, if you have anything, but we worked with Dean and I worked quite extensively with Chris Cook and the attorneys here, and as well as staff, and got it pretty well finalized down. Definitely open for some input and comments, but we feel like it's a very good understanding of what you guys do now as opposed to 1999, and gives a lot of latitude there for being proactive and really helping and assisting the council and the department and the county in stormwater management and practices, and being able to help us in the different functions that we need. So I'll open it up to you.
Yeah, I have a question.
Sure.
So let's see. So the second sentence, the Clean Water Commission shall represent a balanced interest in various stormwater issues. And then the next sentence talks about surface and stormwater issues. So is our charge specifically with just stormwater, or is it also kind of general water pollution issues in the county or that the county has control over?
I think it's balanced interest in various stormwater issues.
Stormwater specifically.
Yes.
Okay.
They got deleted out the surface water treatment and regulation.
Well, except that we work with watersheds, which is surface water.
Right.
It's not treatment. It's not water treatment, but it is surface water quality.
Watershed processes and surface water quality.
So I think they went to the higher level of stormwater issues. So they left it at a bigger level than getting down into the weeds, especially since.
Well, except that the sentence on the fourth line says policies on surface and stormwater.
And they may have moved it, so yeah.
I think that to me, there's not too much of a conflict because the stormwater's impact on surface water is thinking about its effect on salmonids. And I would think that the delineation that it's trying to make, at least if I'm in a conversation with somebody that's not familiar with what we do, is that we're not dealing with drinking water.
Right.
That
wastewater.
Right. That ends up being the question. If I'm saying I'm a clean water commissioner, people are like, oh, do you deal with drinking water? It's like, no, dealing more with storm water, which has an impact on surface water. And like, it can have an impact on drinking water with recharge areas, but that at least is the delineation in my head as to what it's separate from. So I feel that you can say storm water issues, and then another sentence you can say surface and storm water, and it's still the same pot. Although I know where you're coming from on that as far as jurisdiction, but... I mean, to me, if for continuity's sake it said service and stormwater in both.
Well, consistency's sake.
Mm-hmm. Consistent, thank you. Consistency.
Yeah, I mean, so if my suggestion would be in that second sentence to say a balanced interest in various stormwater and water pollution issues. Just add in water pollution to generalize it a little. That's my only suggestion. Otherwise, I think it looks good.
Or for the benefit of consistency on line two, where it says various stormwater issues, it could very easily insert various surface and stormwater issues.
Or stormwater and watershed management issues.
To be consistent, yeah.
Say stormwater and watershed management issues.
Just a thought.
So maybe add and watershed management after various stormwater. That's my only comment. That one kind of stood out to me.
If we were picking, I do like watershed because I do think that concept is missing from lots of policy historically.
So, So you like the and watershed management,
including the terminology of watershed. I appreciate.
Yeah.
Just because it's
yeah, that's what I was trying to get at.
So would you change surface in the line four line fourth line down in the cleaned up one to watershed, or would you leave it surface as it is?
Maybe change surface to watershed management as well for consistency.
Because our mission statement talks about watershed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I always appreciate looking at things in the watershed way, because just the way we humans operate, all our jurisdictions and imaginary lines pay no attention to.
Right. It's not. It's based on subdivisions that are conceptual.
I've always thought that if all of our like voting districts and school districts and all your districts were somehow correlated with like a watershed, or how like that would just like on some level just put everybody in a mind frame.
That was
John. You wouldn't even have to be a quote environmentalist. You just think of it that way.
That was John Wesley Powell's suggestion for managing the West when he did tore through after the Civil War.
Actually, it all up on watershed.
Was to do, yeah, to have the political subdivisions match the water subdivisions.
Oh.
And then given how much interstate tussling there is, like, i.e. the Colorado River,
yeah,
that would have really made a lot of...
I love Powell.
Would have headed off, yeah, a lot of questions. I'm sorry, I have to head out. I need to go pick up her brother and get her home, these guys home into bed on the school night. So, thank you.
Thanks
for coming.
Thank you
for
coming. She's been awesome.
Yeah, she's a good one.
We got a 10-member board.
Yeah, exactly.
At least 9.5.
Yeah, I think David and I have been to a lot of public interest meetings where there's plenty of adults that could learn a lesson or two from
too many times. Yeah. Well put.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, Josh.
So I thought it was interesting the emphasis on service charges adjustment in the original and the adjustment to service charges and effectiveness basically versus expenditures, which, you know, I wasn't aware that gives a little bit more elucidation of where this came from, you know, initially. And I think while we're still, you know, we want the citizens, the residents, the taxpayer to have their bang for the buck from the stormwater program, from the watershed management. And certainly as we were looking at and weighing in on the capital plan, that's an important piece. That is not the whole thing of what we're doing. So I really like the changes. I think it reflects much better.
Thank you. Yes, it was really interesting hearing a number of the historical comments of where and how this document started out and where it is now, and how the commission, half of the commission, was trying to get rid of the clean water fee and get rid of the department and get rid of stormwater and all of that, and the other half was strongly advocating for it. And so that's where there's a lot of and creating that fee and making sure that it was properly managed, fiscally managed as well. And so obviously I think we've moved on from there over the past two decades. So, it was really interesting to hear how things have progressed since then. So a lot of some of the old language just didn't make sense.
No, this is a really good move.
Thank you.
I'm sorry for my expression of being surprised at our last meeting when we were working on our strategic vision. I was like, the code's changing?
Yeah, well, I had the same kind of response. But, you know, it helped us to see it.
Yeah. The only question I have reading through it, and it really isn't a big one, just on the first line there with the change of citizens to residents,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know, maybe it's just because I like the term citizens more, or if there was a thought behind changing
it. Well, is it that you have to be a resident of Clark County?
think it's because that was the intent, was that you had to be living in this area. Otherwise, you could have somebody that would lived in Portland or wherever.
And citizen didn't determine
as opposed
that.
To a citizen could be anywhere. So, and getting away from some of the other politics issues, but mainly yeah. came down to talking with past practices for this board, where people have moved out of this county, therefore they were not eligible, was how this board has interpreted that. So that was also part of it, was
sure.
it's a Clark County commission, therefore it should be Clark County residents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we were going with it, is keeping it locally.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you. I appreciate
yeah,
it.
Great.
And then that's it. And then you have in your packet also, I did attach the news release about the commission. So it has on
oh, cool.
there to Greg Schaefer, Clean Water, Clark County Clean Water Division, P.O. Box 5000, Vancouver, Washington, 98666-5000. Or they can email it to cleanwater@clark.wa.gov. And the deadline is Friday, November 1st, 5 p.m. And it's on the website as well. So encourage if there's anybody out there.
We're talking about doing interviews on the 19th of November. So
if we decide we're going to review that,
that
right before the meeting, and then we may be doing interviews okay. then, but we have it as a placeholder.
Cool.
So considering that normally the chair does the interviews, and the chair is the chair until
yes.
January, and since I'm reapplying, and Michelle, does that mean that we are not allowed to nominate for chair, vice chair for 2020? Since we
not till January.
So we can't be in November election. I'm
right.
just making
you
sure.
You could. I don't see why you couldn't. And if you, for some reason, were not going to be a commissioner, then obviously that would be something that would need to be dealt with at the January meeting.
Okay. And who's going to conduct the interviews for the... I mean, do we
it's
have to go through the interview process?
It's
going to
be Greg,
process?
Brendan, and myself.
And do Michelle and I need to be interviewed as well?
If we make the cut.
We
won't get interviewed, dear.
So everybody's going to apply in order to make sure that everybody is the process, and definitely jump in, so that the process is fair and open for everybody. Everybody needs to reapply and apply for new positions, and then we are going to review the applications. And depending on the applications, we may or may not, depending on how many there may be only three applications. We may not need to interview. So we're going to review those the first week of November, and then we have a place setting right now set up for mid-November to do interviews. We want to have the people selected and sent off for approval to the county manager. My hope is by Thanksgiving, because it needs to be approved by December 17th, that third week of December. Although we will be okay in that the January meeting is going to be January 8th because of the holiday. So there will be the day before will be the first Tuesday of the month. And so we will actually have the county council will actually meet, so we won't have the Christie problem if we miss the deadline by 2 days. So
there was a lot to vote on at that meeting.
So those are the options that are out there. So
can I suggest there be one other council member on the interview
with
panel?
Would be fine with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really think that would be.
Yeah.
I was just curious on the technicality of for you guys interviewing him, because I know when I first came on board, I was filling a vacancy, and so I just had to, after I did my interview and came on board, a couple months later, I just had to send an email that said I was interested in continuing, and it like re-upped. And I don't know if that was just because of how short the turnaround was, or if that's
probably.
I don't know, but when we updated the, I'm going off of the bylaws that were approved, mm-hmm. in the new bylaws, as well as the Clark County the charter,
mm-hmm.
Which lays out pretty specifically on a number of those issues as well. So, and then just keeping with Greg and his experience has been to making sure it was very open and the process was very transparent. Is the word I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're going with it, and we still have the vice chair will be there, and then I know Greg wanted to be part of the interview panel as well. So
we're
trying to keep it small and nimble. Because the more calendars you add, the more opportunity we have for not being available. So
sounds like we could add one more.
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea. I think before we've usually had two.
We'll do that.
Commission members and interviewing, so it helps to cement what's needed. To complement.
Then you can discuss.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Is there anybody that's interested?
I don't mind. I'm not the most experienced though, since this is my first year, so I probably.
I'm already there. So.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to email the Maynards and
Josh.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and Sue. Oh, and when she's better.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, that stuff. Yeah.
I'll let everybody know, and then Greg can make the decision of who he would like to add to the panel.
Yep. And I don't have my phone on me. Worst millennial ever. So I actually don't have my schedule because we're rotating. So.
Okay. So. Strategic plan. So we've got a copy here with some edits.
Oh, before we go.
Oh, sorry.
I don't know whether.
I buried my agenda. So.
Did you find it?
Not yet. I was looking for something else.
Well, that is next, but I had a question about the tour. What happened with the tour?
It was rescheduled for the spring.
Okay.
You said March.
Okay.
And I was kind of wondering, too, because we've had a lot of presentations and we're really kind of on a roll, if we wanted to go ahead and add an April meeting and kind of leave the summer open because that's when more people are traveling. But one more, you know, having an October and April meeting, I think, will carry the momentum. Something that people can think about.
I'm good with that. I mean, I'm always the more the merrier, but.
So an April meeting in addition to the other meeting?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It just seems like every other month it's hard to get stuff done and keep things rolling.
No, I kind of like that idea. I mean, trying to move to an every month plan is a lot, especially for you,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Being able to throw a couple in between would be nice throughout the year.
Especially with absences in the summer.
Yeah.
Everybody's busy.
Yeah, that's when. And yeah. So spring and fall, people have a little more energy. It seems like a little more free time.
More likely to be here.
Yeah. I don't know about free time, just less travel.
Yeah. Yes. I agree with you there.
And if you'd like, we'll just keep them still as a special meeting? Or do you
yeah.
Want? Okay.
Yeah, because we don't want to have to change our bylaws.
So well, and even then I was thinking about that, the fact that there isn't the, on the bylaws, they actually doesn't have a caveat in there for excused absence. That was something that you didn't want to have. And so an absence is an absence is an absence.
I think it's because we felt like it was such a
and it was still the rotating. We still had it being the 1 year, so there was some still flexibility there. But if that's something, and I saw one other little thing that could be changed, but maybe next year the research committee might look at that as doing another quick little update,
okay,
or something along those lines. If it's something you want to do, but
I think that's a good point, especially if we're having more meetings, even if they're special meetings.
Yeah. Well, special meetings are not required. You are not required to be here, but
okay. So the head count only applies to the every other month meeting, still.
Right.
Okay. I think it's one thing when someone knows ahead of time that they're not here, or there's an illness, as opposed to someone who just doesn't show up on a consistent basis.
Right. So that might be something that you'll want to address with the bylaws for excused versus unexcused.
Okay. And so that's also why we aren't approving minutes from the last meeting and this meeting, because this is a special meeting, so we'll do them next time.
And I wasn't sure we would have a quorum. And we were supposed to have three groups presenting. So I didn't know how much regular business we were actually going to be able to conduct. So we'll have this meeting and the September meeting's minutes available for approval at the November meeting.
All right. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Okay. So you'll see some comments in purple and in orange, just some more ideas. So we have like 20 minutes or so. Did we want to look at what we already said? Do we want to move forward and cover some of the other points that we didn't get to? What's your thoughts?
Trying to think of how to wordsmith my comment, because lots of things I say sound like such a naysayer. I'm trying to like take this and hammer it into, you know, kind of the focus piece with what we have. And so for me, lots of times when I'm looking at a vision statement, a core values, the various sections that we have, one thing that I have a tendency to do is to try to narrow it down to the real meat and potatoes of what I want people to focus on and not get kind of lost in the other details. And so, like, if we go to section 3 with the core values, I was looking at this the other day and thinking about how, for me, and this is just for purpose of conversation, because I don't have any issue with the idea of honesty, but the reason I don't feel like listing it is I feel like it should go without saying.
Okay.
So that is just one example of things and parts with, to me, from my part, I think that certain pieces, it's like, okay, what is it, we should come to the table with that already without having to
integrity has honesty as a part of integrity anyway, so
right.
Mm-hmm.
Now I hesitated a lot on saying it, because it's not the type of thing where I was like, I don't think we should have honesty and integrity.
and I agree that we should cut down some of it, like the mission statement and the vision statement. Mission and vision statements, I've always seen, at least in my experience, as, I know this is a brainstorming document, but, you know, small, little, the key points, and that's about it. So I like writing everything out for brainstorming too, but definitely would like to cut it down a bit.
If I may put you on the spot, would you take me on that?
Oh, I know. I'm thinking that it's, assuming that it's under integrity, I would agree with taking it out. But I think it's very important to keep integrity in there. I mean, one could assume that one wouldn't be, but I just...
It's always good to emphasize
integrity. In this world, day and age, I don't think one can assume.
Yeah. You know, when somebody prefaces their comments with, let me be perfectly honest with you, the question goes up, now really, huh? So instead of using the word honesty, though, I really like the word that Alice used earlier, and that being transparency.
Yeah.
And transparency is different from integrity, because it's being completely, it's about being completely candid about all aspects of a particular thing. And I think transparency might be a better word in that regard to replace that item F.
So here's a thought. So we have 12 words there that we just brainstormed. Mm-hmm. What if I put them on the whiteboard and then we narrow down the top four? Everyone takes a vote? Yeah? Does that work?
You can try.
And some of them can be subsets underneath your core values.
Right. Like biodiversity and then like A and B can be.
Is four arbitrary?
Yes, it is. I just threw that out there because you want to be brief. What? How many do you think we should have?
I think as many as you need to be complete.
Yeah. Mm. I like 10.
Yeah, 12 is too many.
Or 7. 10 or 7. 7's prime.
Yeah.
3's
7.
Few.
Yeah. 7's one of those.
5's a prime.
Power numbers.
5 is a good number.
3 is a power
five.
Number, too, by the
way. Yeah, it's too few. So if we just voted on them, we can see how they clump out. Often that's a way
of
doing.
So if we have seven things nasty, that really stand out, everyone will love
seven
them.
Habits of successful people.
Well,
three is a powerful number. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost right there.
It's pretty powerful.
Right? It's a powerful number.
Five people you meet in heaven.
Let's see how they fall out.
What the heck? Three is a prime number.
So are you going to use transparency?
Yes, I'm going to
Okay.
We could bring Fibonacci into the equation.
If we go with 13, though, that's a prime, but I'm a little superstitious of that one.
Oh, yeah. You move in the other direction.
We have Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh. Is that it?
Yes,
yeah, that's
Three Rivers Stadium.
Yeah. Seven elements of the strategic plan.
The fifth element.
Yeah. his original design.
Seven wonders of the world.
To the skyline of Pittsburgh. They wouldn't do it back in the 70s, which is when they built, or 60s, which is when they built the earlier version, which they collapsed. Yeah.
That's cool.
I asked him, I said, are you sad they're demolishing the Three Rivers Stadium? He said, no, I'm ecstatic because they're building the one I designed.
Did he get any letters of, like, you were right?
No, of course not. He didn't expect it. He was 85 at that point. He was pretty realistic.
Letting go of the ego at that point.
Exactly.
Okay.
So you want us to give? What do you want? How do
Should
you want?
Should we just take maybe votes on them right now, and I'll just do hashtags?
Votes to like eliminate some of them as we go.
Yeah,
I want to
start with
the
first. That might be easy.
Oh dear.
Well, honesty is out.
Okay.
We're not honest.
Well, no,
I thought you changed it to transparency.
Oh, it's under added. It's our 13th.
Okay.
I was just thinking that we could pick between stewardship and legacy.
Okay.
I think that that stewardship, the idea behind stewardship, is for the purpose of legacy. So that
I think stewardship is a stronger word for the purpose of the commission.
Okay. And we're talking about one thing, so
why is it
stewardship?
And we're talking about being a one of our things that we talked about was being a steward to the natural environment and everything. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So can I cross out legacy?
Okay.
You could take out intergenerational for that matter if you're doing that.
Right.
Okay.
That was a big sigh.
Well, I'm not sure that I'd vote for that, but I'm
okay. So we could wait on that.
I think that integrity is key to any collaborative group.
So this is I'll do that one in red. Okay.
I think that
collapse G and H. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, G and H I think can be combined. Collaborative and cooperative are relatively synonymous. I like collaborative more than cooperative.
I like collaborative.
Yeah, there's sometimes when it's just a matter of cooperation, you know, when there's not an active working together, but, you know, there's sort of a support. Yeah, you're doing good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. That sometimes you have to negotiate to a happy medium.
Yeah. Which is why I think collaboration is also good.
Okay.
I just say collaboration and cooperation, or vice versa.
So
can A and B be combined?
Stewardship and natural resources. Mm-hmm. Well, the other that I didn't write on here is public interest.
Well, the public interest also comes in under community customer focus, C.
Mm-hmm. Actually, A, B, and C could be combined.
Does that put us at 7?
So stewardship of natural resources that are in the public interest.
Or community.
Or that are of community focus.
Public interest is our community. Pretty much. When we're talking about the public here, it's the citizens of Clark County.
Maybe stewardship, stewardship to natural resources. I totally lost my train of thought there. I had it and it just...
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, public interest in biodiversity or something like that.
Interest in biodiversity. What about J?
I was just going to ask about that.
Does that ring a bell or...
I think that kind of goes with integrity and...
I don't even remember what we meant by that.
Yeah, I was trying to...
I think we meant as in, like, peer... Like, we're focusing on, like, the scientific focus, like, peer-reviewed research.
Validated.
And, yeah, validated sources.
That's good. So it would be, like, scientifically based.
Right.
And I think that's important to keep. But I wouldn't keep that word.
I'll just put that
there. Say scientific basis.
And I mean the validatory or being scientific can also not be included under the core values, but can be roped into a mission statement as well.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too.
Yeah,
that's what I think the inspiration for it is.
Sort of is anyway already.
Right.
Guided by science.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hate to throw it out as a core value because it's too easy to step over it or have it to be misinterpreted. It's not. I think it's not assumed.
No, one question I have, but when we get to narrowing these kind of down. If we are coming up with yours, I hope we do three, you know, that are sentences. A sentence can encapsulate mm-hmm. several of these in the one gadget. Like, I mean, if you're looking at stewardship of our community's natural resources through science-based oversight, or I'm trying to figure out my last word there. I'm like roping four of them together. I just need one more to tie it in.
Intergenerational community.
Or
multi-generational
community.
Yeah, that's the work, is to take all this and compress it into one sentence.
Yeah.
No, three sentences.
Well, I think core values can be bullets. That's how I've normally seen them. The mission statement is a sentence, but core value is bullets so that people can just go, yeah.
My previous employer in the court system, our four values were justice, integrity, professionalism, and trust. And under those four, there were subcategories under justice, and there were two or three statements of this is what we believe are the core values of this is what they defined what justice meant. And then they had, you know, trust. This is what defines trust. Integrity. This is what defines integrity. And the last one was professionalism, and this is what we define in professionalism. So if you want, and I know that they've just updated their strategic plan. They've been actually doing, they're one of the first courts in the country actually to do this, and they've been doing it now for about 10-12 years, have been doing strategic planning, and that was one of the things, and I know that I think they've recently updated it, but that's also something you can do, is have your four or five key values that define the Clean Water Commission, and then under that you can flesh out what does transparency mean to the Clean Water Commission. what does, you know, integrity mean, and what does stewardship mean? And you can then define those out that way as well. You don't have to have it be a big long thing. It's what are your values? What are you? What are the feelings? What's important and speaks about this commission the most? Not in the head, but in the heart.
Okay. So what if, since we're using our time, we take what we have, and I'll draft it and send it out, and go like two ways, you know, two examples of what has been suggested, and then we can take it from there.
Okay. I would suggest, before we totally move off of it, something that's multi-generational. I mean, to some extent, stewardship gets there, but we were thinking about generations to come and the involvement of all generations in stewarding the resources, stewarding the water quality through outreach. You know, I think it's important to still capture all of the different generations somehow.
Well, I think multi.
Yeah. I think it's better than intergenerational.
But people understand the multi.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how it will fit in, but I trust you.
I think when we wrote that one, we were sitting here going, what's the word? Because it was on the tip of everyone's tongue for focusing on the future.
Okay. Sounds good.
Draft that one up. 5 minutes. Anything else for you?
To me, it is a little bit interesting. I think Devin had a reference in her slide where a lot of these environmental in the presentations, you, of course, you'll see the environment in this circle, you know, environmental, but you'll see another economic, you'll see another social, and they're integrated, right? And so I think just from an outsider view, if you look at the core values, you can almost get in one of those three categories and kind of go from there.
Could be a graphic.
Okay. So, social, economical. What was the other one?
Environmental.
It's the three-legged stool for sustainability.
I like that. Three-legged stool. Like the fire triangle. One with that the other.
I think under the SWOT analysis, under threat, we have the changing regulatory environment, public opinion, and awareness. I think there's also, there are always financial threats or limitations in terms of available funds from any, and sort of continuously or long-term available. Some projects, you know, need to take place, or monitoring needs to take place over a longer period of time. And if you're just grant funded, it may only be a couple of years, and then you really don't have the opportunity to capture what might be real benefits because they're 5 years out or something like that. So, if you're looking to raise fees and you have to say, here's the benefit that has been demonstrated, but you haven't had the flexibility to actually document it.
Well, that's definitely tough public opinion on that, too, in this county.
And we don't get to raise fees.
But yeah. Anyone else want to take a picture?
I'll wait for you. Send it out.
Can you read the green?
Yeah. I like the attend X community outreach event in the comment. I mean, I think that should be a year objective.
Document our presence.
Yeah, along with the accomplishing something new each year.
Right. And I think that it really, I mean, everybody puts work into attending, like, the drip and drive events and then the schools and neighborhood association meetings. I think that's, we don't really have a point if we're not getting out there.
So do we want to include this in the annual report? Do we have a timeline on this? Or
I don't think we'll have this ready for...
Yeah, I don't think.
No.
It would be a push, so maybe next year.
Yeah. This way we can really put some thought into it.
Mm-hmm. Try it out. Yeah. Try it out for a year, sort of.
Although you should be able to say in your report that you are working on it.
Yes.
Yes.
You're developing a strategic plan.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Okay, great.
Joel, am I here? Did you mark me here?
Oh, and late. Michelle came in late.
Only 3 minutes late.
It's one of those days.
Michelle, I noted you came in at 33. I noted you were here.
Even if you just barely missed roll call.
Ryan was talking, so I didn't want to interrupt.
No, I understand. I understand.
Otherwise,
totally. I wanted to be as
the speaker
conspicuous as possible, of course.
So-and-so just walked in. Okay, Jimmy, it's your turn.
I'll be teaching a class on the 19th to, well, we'll see how many people sign.